97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Mark Reardon.
All the spending, all the regulating, turning off the oil and gas spigots, all these things, the chickens have come home to roost.
The Mark Reardon Show.
You can lead a man to the presidency, but you can't make him think.
Ill begotten gains of Putin's kleptocracy.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
I think I'm going to miss that when he's out of office, whenever that happens. We'll have to change all those things up with Joe Biden. We'll miss him, I think, just a little bit. How is everyone this afternoon? Sue Thomas, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
How is the Hall of Famer?
I'm great.
That didn't sound very enthusiastic.
No,
Fred.
I'm great.
I'm getting
used to the sitting in the new studio.
Yeah, well, we're not supposed to talk about that, right? We're just going to act like nothing's changed or nothing's... here's what I told people yesterday internally. I said my expectations were so low, there's no way that it can't exceed expectations, which it didn't. For those of you who weren't with us yesterday, we just have a... happens every once in a while, every decade or so in radio. They're changing out our mixing boards, our control boards, and they had to switch us down to a different studio. So we're down on the KMOX side. It makes it a whole lot easier for Fred because you work down here all the time.
That's right.
And although we kind of have taken over his studio. And then yesterday we had a couple of things that were, you know, a little tricky, but they have the engineers are working hard and they've got things settled in here today. And then my good news is, you guys don't like to hear this, but I'm off the rest of the week, so you got to deal with all the rest of the mess.
I mean,
and,
yay.
Well, you might be back in the regular studio tomorrow. That's what they're saying.
Really?
Yeah. Guess who I talked to today, by the way? I talked to Tricia for the first time since she had the baby. I've been letting her, you know, I don't want to talk any work or anything. She's got the maternity leave, but I finally had a call because she's bringing in Bernie.
Yeah.
But she's bringing him in on Tuesday morning when we're not here.
I know. You know what? But she said there was a strategy to it,
I don't like it, though.
I don't either. But the strategy was she's going to bring him when he's awake and happy. And then put him down for a nap. She wants, you know, we want to see the best side of Bernie, and that's what she's aiming for.
And possibly not see Mark.
Well,
you know, that might have been strategy. You can't deny that. Well, Fred, I might, you know, really depend on you here because ordinarily on any given show, I don't really prepare much about what I'm going to say, but on a day like this, it's probably even less so because I'm a little bit more scattershot. And I guess what I mean by that is just because of the change of studio and everything, we got things that are a little bit disheveled. We got Paul Morrow coming up here. He was going to be with us yesterday. We had to change gears because of what did we change gears on yesterday? It was the news conference was on Monday. Dude, I'm losing complete track of everything. All I know is that Paul's going to be with us here.
Right.
In just a few minutes, we have our friend Alex Rich, who is with us in the 4 o'clock hour. I've got it. Sue, you're going to like this. Have you got caught up? Have you been caught? What the hell?
I've had these days.
Just bear with
me.
And I'm so glad I'm off the next couple of days. Have you been caught up on the Jordan Chiles Olympic medal situation?
Yeah, producer emeritus Dave Klein sent me that video yesterday. That's supposed to be proof, and it kind of is.
I'm going to explain that at 4:07 before Sue's news, because that's been confusing to me, but there's been back and forth. And it's almost like, I don't know if I can, I'm going to do it. Why don't I just compare it to this? It's almost like the Marcellus Williams case right now here in St. Louis, the guy that's going to be put to death. Now, let me explain this. This is going to sound weird. Marcellus Williams is guilty as hell, okay? They tried to act like he wasn't, and they said, oh, there's DNA evidence. Well, it wasn't there. It was the prosecutor's DNA evidence. But the only thing that they're trying to do right now with this guy who brutally, brutally murdered a woman by the name of Lisha Gale in University City in 1998, and she was stabbed 43 times. She worked for the Post-Dispatch, which is ironic because the Post-Dispatch is just gaslighting this thing, and Tony Messenger and those idiots are writing columns. This poor woman worked for her, you know, worked for them. So the only thing they have right now is a technicality. That's all they have. They're going in trying to get the Supreme Court to stop this execution. My position is remove this despicable person from the planet. Let me prime the needle because this has gone on far too long. Think about being the family members. You know, Lisha Gale's husband is remarried and he doesn't want to say anything about all this stuff, right?
Right.
Understandably, so he's been through the ringer so many times, but his new wife has written several op-ed pieces for the Post-Dispatch, kind of mapping out exactly what happened here. And this whole nonsense, and I've covered death penalty cases for decades, and I've talked about this, and I remain a supporter of the death penalty because I think that in a situation like this, when you stab someone 43 times, I mean, he should have been removed from the planet a long time ago, right? But that didn't happen because they keep appealing and they keep appealing. They appeal on this. Oh, yeah, he's innocent. He's not innocent.
Mark,
okay?
Are you saying that,
not innocent.
That his current wife is saying this is ridiculous? He should be put to death? I mean,
oh,
well, yeah.
No, so Lisha Gale's widower, I guess you would say, is her husband,
yes.
Right? That she was married to when she was killed, is now remarried.
Right, and is the new wife...
The new wife is saying, lay off my husband. You are repeating this over and over and over again. We've had to relive this nightmare time and time and time again because of the Innocence Project. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Now, in all the cases that I've covered over 35 years of doing this, in particular talking about news, what has there been? Maybe one person or two that was put to death row that eventually got out because they weren't guilty amongst hundreds of thousands of murderers. It just doesn't happen, ladies and gentlemen. These are guilty people. Now, I appreciate the Constitution, and
right.
you can't do things that are nefarious in order to get a conviction. If there's funny business going on, well, then the court should get involved. That didn't happen here. Okay, this guy is about as guilty as they come. But here's why I brought it up with Jordan Chiles. Let me circle back to that. I didn't know this, okay? The only reason that they kept her from that medal is because of a technicality.
Yeah, it's
and I'll
true.
Explain that at 407, but the technicality doesn't hold up when you look at the videos. It
That's
was a
right.
timing thing because they didn't ask, was it the Koreans? Who was it? They asked for a review, but they didn't do it
in the window
proper time frame.
In which they are allotted to do so. But this
right.
video may say otherwise.
Well, yeah, I mean... We'll run that down, and I'll get to that here in just a second. Now, I want to talk about, before we get Paul Morrow, I have to talk about the Ducey KJP moment from yesterday. We didn't talk about this yesterday, right?
No.
But this is one of those that, when I heard her response, I was stunned. And I don't know if it's just because she was caught off guard, she didn't know how to respond, but amongst all the things that she's lied about up there in the briefing room, and let's face it, I was... very wrong about KJP. I thought she'd last about 6 months because she was so awful, but she didn't. She lasted 3 years. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. But Peter Ducey, you have a situation out there where former president has been attempted to be killed twice. Two times.
Yes. Within how long?
Two months.
2 months.
Less than 2 months, right? And the other side keeps talking about he's a threat to democracy. He's a threat. All of these things. We got to put him in the bullseye, right? Now, I'm the first person to admit that Donald J. Trump uses rhetoric that, in my estimation, is not acceptable at times, right? But in this particular situation, I don't think it's too tough to call which side is using rhetoric that is leading someone to be potentially assassinated. Yeah. It's not that tough to figure out here, right? But here's what happened.
It's been only 2 days since somebody allegedly tried to kill Donald Trump again. And you're here at the podium in the White House briefing room calling him a threat.
Jeez.
How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question.
Well, let me just stop right there. I disagree with the premise of your question. There's no premise. The question is, don't you guys have to think about your rhetoric because you keep calling him a threat to democracy and you wonder why people are trying to take him out? So that was initially a stupid thing to say.
The question that you're asking, it is also incredibly dangerous.
Dangerous.
In the way that you're asking it because American people are watching. And to say that from the administration who has consistently condemned political violence, from an administration where the president called the former president and was thankful, grateful that he was okay, from an administration who has called out January 6th, called out the attack of Paul Pelosi, called out and said we need to lower the temperature after the Butler incident, and now for you to make that kind of comment in your question, that is also incredibly dangerous. When we have been very clear in condemning political violence from here.
All right, I wanted to play the whole answer.
Wow, that is
shocking. I don't understand how she can scold him for asking a completely legitimate question. And, you know, this is what happens when you're at a podium, you're asked questions, you don't know how to answer it, but Ducey follows up here a little bit.
Good.
What I have said about the president, the former president, about January 6th is facts. It's, you all have reported. It is fact. When you have a former president who basically says that the election wasn't, the results of the election were not the results of the election, when dozens of more than 60 Republican judges said that it was a free and fair election. You had more than 2,000 people who were told to go to the Capitol. It was one of the darkest days of our democracy. One of the darkest days. There were people who, law enforcement officers, who died because of what happened at the Capitol. And they were there because the former president told them to go there.
All right, so they want to keep going. Fred, where's the cut where she says, maybe I'm not playing the right thing here, because what I'm trying to get to here is where she's talking about how she's got examples. Is this the third cut where she says that?
No, it's KJP, a little bit further down. KJP.
Yeah, I'm hitting the wrong cuts, unfortunately. So here it is.
There are mentally unstable people who are attempting to kill political candidates, attempting to kill Donald Trump, and they are still hearing this White House refer to him as a threat. Is there no concern that people are taking that literally?
We're using examples. We're not just saying that just to say it. January 6th, Peter, January 6th. Wait, January 6th.
Oh, examples. The only reason, this is why I wanted this cut. She's using examples. The problem is that examples, the word examples is plural, and in order to get to the plural, she just keeps saying the same thing over and over again.
Yep. How many times do we have to, January 6, 2021? That is a fact. I know your focus has to be on this side of the house. It can't be on your side of the house. I get that. But we also have to be careful on how you're asking me these questions.
Oh, no, you don't.
No.
All right, and so here's the other thing, and this never gets called out by the legacy media. Let us count the ways. You know, one of the favorite things that I always heard from people who hated me, because a lot of people hated me on the Cam Wex side. I love the 97.1 listeners. You're my people, right? Now, not everyone likes me, and I'm not a very likable person. But I do like it when I'd complain about the legacy media and said, what are you talking about? You're the media. You're on Cam Wex. Well, fair enough, except that here's the problem with that. You have the New York Times. You have Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, CBS, everything. So we have a couple of outliers on the conservative side, and, you know, that's it, right? Now, you have Fox, but look, it's heavily weighted in the other direction. On this, I'm going to offer another analogy here. They got January 6th, right? And then they got January 6th, and then they got January 6th. Well, you know what I have? I have Mike Brown in Ferguson burning. Then 6 months later, I got Mike Brown again in Ferguson burning again 3 months later when the grand jury comes in. Then we have the Stockley case. And I'm just focusing on St. Louis, ladies and gentlemen. Got the Stockley case. More violence. Businesses burned. And, you know, damage and vandalism and people hurt, right? Then we have George Floyd. Who can forget all the violence? That was political violence that was taking place across the country, right? Let's think about what happened in the spring on college campuses to Jewish students in this country. I mean, why? Now, I'm not faulting Peter Ducey here, but why can't you mention some of those things? I mean, shouldn't there be a little follow-up with Karine Jean-Pierre saying, you want to talk about January 6th, and I'm on the record multiple times as being horrified by what I saw on January 6th and putting some of the blame on Donald Trump for not stepping in a little sooner, right?
But they're essentially doing what they're accusing him of doing, which is to not say this is where it stops. We can't keep calling people whatever this issue is. You can't keep saying Trump is a threat to democracy. And you just can't bend it to that. And they're essentially refusing to do that. It makes no sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. But here's why it makes sense, Sue. And this is going to go back to what happened in both debates. In both debates, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris used Charlottesville as an example with the very fine people. It's been debunked. I debunked it when it happened. Many of us did. Finally, Snopes comes around. I mean, there's not even any doubt if you listen to the entire speech what he was saying, right? They want to lie about that continuously. And the reason that they do it is because they know they're not going to be corrected,
yeah.
right? So when
yeah.
Karine Jean-Pierre is in the press briefing room, and Peter Doocy is the only guy out there that is asking questions like this, and you know, outside of Jackie Heinrich from Fox, that there's never going to be anyone that says, you know what, Karine, let's kind of piggyback off that. You say this about January 6th, but what about all the other political, you know, demonstrations and violence that's occurred in this country since then? But they don't want to talk about that. And by the way, there's never the right involved in that. It's not the people on the right outside of January 6th who's tearing buildings down and destroying things. January 6th was awful. Well, it should be condemned.
Okay, so there have been two attempts at assassinating President Trump, and she can't just say, yeah, that's pretty bad, and we don't want this to happen. They don't even say that. They just say January 6th. How about addressing what we are talking about right here?
They don't care. They can just say January 6th over and over again. Here's Steve Scalise, by the way, talking about this.
We all know Kamala Harris, her quotes, where she says, Trump, quote, Trump is a threat to our democracy and fundamental freedoms. She said this over and over again, not just before the first attempt. Even after the first attempt on President Trump's life, there might have been a 2 or 3 day pause, and then they went right back to it.
Yeah, and they did go right back to it. Now, there's still some questions, obviously, about the second assassination attempt. We're trying to find out information. Here's Chris Wray talking about that, the FBI director.
For the second time in just over 2 months, we've witnessed what appears to be an attempt to attack our democracy and our democratic process. And I'm relieved that former President Trump is safe, and I want the American people to know that the men and women of the FBI are working tirelessly to get to the bottom of what happened.
You know, I'm confused only because I thought that the only real threat to democracy was the Trump-Vance ticket. So I'm a little surprised that Chris Wray was saying that.
Our work is very much ongoing, and we're just a few days into the investigation, so we're limited in what we can say. At this point, what I can say is that we have dedicated the full force of the FBI to this investigation, and that runs the gamut from criminal to national security resources, from tactical support to evidence response teams, from forensic scientists to operational technology personnel, and I could go on. Together, we're working around the clock to investigate this.
So that's the latest from the FBI. And by the way, on the topic of the FBI, I remember I was playing that video yesterday, Sue, and we were in a break. I don't know if you paid attention to that at all. So there's a guy, I'm trying to find this. I thought Dave Strom wrote about it on Hot Air, but there was a guy who, he's a bit of a rabble rouser, and I'm going to try to find his name here on Twitter. And he must have said something. I don't know what the entire context is, what he said originally, but two agents from the FBI showed up at his home. And he was videotaping, or, you know, his camera out the whole time, and he's trying to ask them why they're there, or, you know, is there a reason for them to be there? And they didn't like the fact that he was recording, and eventually they walked away. But it was interesting from a couple of different perspectives, mainly because what in the world are we doing? We got an assassination attempt, we got a second assassination attempt, you got crime, violent crime that's running rampant, and the FBI is sending people to some conservative pundit's home because they think that he said something threatening on the Twitter, which they couldn't even point out what was threatening. That was a little confusing. So resources of the federal government, somewhat questionable. We're coming back. We got Paul Morrow coming up next.
The Mark Reardon Show on St. Louis's home for conservative talk.
Well, the bad news is we will not have a Reardon Roundtable this week because I am off the next couple of days. I think they got Ryan Recker going to fill in here for a couple of days, and I'll be back on Monday with the whole team. And by that time, we should be settled in our new studio. Paul Morrow is back with us this afternoon, Fox News contributor. Of course, he founded the opsdesk.org, and I believe he is headed to a Trump rally to assess security as we speak. Paul, how are you this afternoon?
I'm very good, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. So you are, though, heading to Long Island right now, aren't you? That's what I'm told.
I am indeed, yeah, heading out to the Trump rally at the Nassau Coliseum.
So what is your assessment of what happened on Sunday? It's interesting, Paul, to me, because, look, I think the way I look at it right now is it seems like the Secret Service did its job given the circumstances. But are there reasons to kind of fault them in this situation as well or not?
I mean, look, the entire thing appears to be a complete breakdown. And, you know, all roads at the end of the day, lead to Alejandro Mayorkas. And I think that, you know, we all are having the same conversation about how this could have happened twice and et cetera. But at the end of the day, we still have not heard from the guy who's responsible. And I just don't understand how in a hierarchical organization, at some point, somebody just doesn't say, get the top guy in here and ask him how this can continually happen.
Right.
To the guy who is the odds-on favorite for the next president. I just don't understand that, and that's really where this needs to terminate. And now you even have the Dems turning against him with Blumenthal coming out and saying that he's very frustrated, and I really do feel like at the end of the day here, he really is the person that has to be put on point, and he has to feel the threat of impeachment. Now, look, you know, we only got a couple of months here until the whole administration is lame duck, but I'm really very, very frustrated, just as the senator is, that we've never really gotten any answers. And, you know, the first investigation really could have gotten at least this. Pull out the operational plan and show us who was supposed to be on that roof. That one piece would have probably tamped things down, but they're just so reflexively secretive that we can't even get that, and as a result, the conspiracy theories grow.
Yep, yeah, that's exactly right.
That's exactly right. Well, you're going to kind of be interested, I guess, going to this rally. This is an indoor rally tonight on Long Island, Paul?
It is, yeah, in an arena.
So, you know, the questions that have come up, though, about the amount of agents, et cetera, I think you can understand that President Trump's a former president, he's a candidate, but at the same time, it's just sort of common sense to say, okay, we've got a lot of threats against the former president. It seems to be ramping up. Maybe we need more security. Now, we were told by the new director that that has, in fact, happened. But it does seem, the other thing we heard this week is that they're down, what is it, 900, 950 agents or something like that.
They are. And according to my sourcing and the reporting, they also have an inordinate number of people doing investigations. And while the Secret Service has always had the remit of doing counterfeit, they are really not tasked with that as their primary mission. Their primary mission is executive protection, period, end of story. And that's what's gone south here. And I don't understand also why there isn't that isn't part of the assessment here.
Yeah.
And that really should be. I mean, that should be part of, look, how many people do we have doing the work that we're supposed to be doing? How many people are not? And why is it, you know, so bifurcated?
Well, your question about Mayorkas is interesting because that guy, you know, there was the effort to impeach him, which he should have been tossed out. The culpability that he has on so many different fronts right now. And we see him less than we do Joe Biden, which is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, he hides and it's all roads lead to him. I mean, not only on the service, but on the border and a host of other things, including things like the fact that we have all these people on a terrorist watch list coming in. Sure, there's overlap. You have the FBI, you have other people, et cetera. But really, at the end of the day, this is a domestic security thing. This is him. And this is a guy who just has not taken ownership of anything. And what it really comes down to is that we don't have a president. Because the person who should really be saying, okay, look, get in here, I want answers, I want to report tomorrow, get a crew, get a task force set up, et cetera, is the president. And the president just is MIA. I don't know what he does all day and where he is. And I know bureaucracies enough to know that when the top guy is MIA, the whole thing falls apart. And, you know, when you say to yourself, okay, if he's gone, who's supposed to step in? Well, that's Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And
yikes.
If this is the job performance that we're supposed to be basing our vote on in November, you got to have, you know, serious pause about who you pull the lever for.
Paul Morrow is back with us from Fox News. Also, he is the founder of theopsdesk.org. I want to talk about the website. You have a couple of cool things on the website where you have on each side, on the left side, you have a campus crime update. On the right side, you have the border disaster. And you guys go on the border disaster, just to give the listeners an example. You kind of highlight some of the things that are happening almost in real time where you go back to, I guess you go back further, but the full list, you have to press full list. But let's just go back to August 14th. Illegal Nicaraguan arrested, knife point rape on Coney Island. September 16th. By the way, there's a bunch of others that happened on September 14th. September 16th, more than 100 suspected gangbangers rushed the border. So you're kind of in real time blogging about both of these campus crime situations and the border, Paul.
Yeah, so I'm trying to track this stuff that nobody tracks. And, you know, at the end of the day, what ended up happening is that we're going to realize that there was nobody that was kind of putting all these things together in one place so that the various police agencies could try to synchronize their efforts, because very clearly the feds have decided they're not going to do it. And I've advocated on the website something called JAM teams, which is Joint Anti-Migrant Crime Teams, very much like the JTTFs, because you gotta remember, this is an international problem. You need not only the state and locals, but you need the reach of the feds at the border and overseas, so you can try to track some of these gangs coming in who are establishing themselves, Tren de Aragua, etc. And feds are just interested. And so there's no clearinghouse, and you need a clearinghouse. And so ultimately it occurred to me, well, you know what, why not me? The problem is, of course, is I'm just, you know, one guy with some helpers. And, you know, it's growing, actually, and so that's why I'm even able to do what I do. But it really is just a God and country effort, because there's no synchronization. And without that, you're not going to make a dent. We're going to continue to see these stories, and they continue to be denied by, you know, our leaders, yeah, including, as I said, Mayorkas and the president.
Well, I love the feature. That was pretty cool. I hadn't noticed that before. If we were speaking 1 week ago today, I certainly would ask you about your reflections of 9/11. I still want to do that today, because I know that you wrote about this on the website, and it's, you know, never too late to talk about some of those things that happened on that day, Paul.
Yeah, so, you know, I was there, obviously. I spent a lot of time there. I spent months afterwards. I was there day of, and I got there just after the second tower came down. And, you know, my standard line on that is the further we get away from 9/11, the closer we get to 9/10. And we all were very happy to say never forget, never forget, but yet we almost instantaneously forgot. And we seem like we're not relearning the lessons that we should be relearning, that we never should have forgotten. And among those are things like, you know, the security at the border. I can tell you that's when I was doing counterterrorism for all those years. If somebody showed up on a set that is a, you know, series of people that you were interested in, maybe had informants or some sort of coverage, and this person had no border friction, this person wasn't identified, this person had no background, you couldn't figure out where they came from, et cetera, bells would go off like I can't even overstate. And when you consider we've essentially just let in 20 million of those, you can imagine what we're looking at in terms of the future. And I don't think we've seen the worst of it. I really don't. Irrespective of who wins the next election, I think we're going to be living with the repercussions of this, both in the espionage world, the counterterrorism world, the criminal world, all of that going forward, no matter what retroactive actions are attempted now with whoever is president. We've really put ourselves in it, and I think we're only seeing the beginning.
I have some great audio I'm going to share in the next segment from a congressional hearing today on the topic of immigration, which is, I think, some of it's rather stunning when you hear the sheriff from Arizona who completely almost ignores that there is an immigration problem. I don't know who he was hired by. But, Paul, I always appreciate your, you know, insight here on 97.1 FM Talk, and thank you so much, and enjoy the rally tonight.
I will do, and I appreciate it, Mark. You guys take care.
All right, take care. That's Paul Morrow. He's actually en route to Long Island to see the Trump rally tonight. One of the reasons he wants to kind of, you know, assess the situation with security and report back on Fox. We'll take a break. I do have that audio from the immigration hearing, and that's coming up here. Sue's News after 4. Well, this was quite the hearing today that featured some crazy, wacky testimony. It was called A Country Without Borders, How the Biden-Harris Open Borders Policies Have Undermined Our Safety and Security. That was the hearing before the Committee on Homeland Security. And the mother of Rachel Morin, Rachel is a mother of five, found murdered in August. Her killer was arrested in June in Oklahoma, charged with first-degree murder, rape, and kidnapping. And, you know, her mom was testifying before this hearing today, saying some things. And here's what's interesting. Bill Malusian was covering this for Fox. And the dynamic, just before you hear Patty Morin, one of the witnesses that was invited by the Democrats is an Arizona sheriff who is African-American by the name of David Hathaway. And he's about as, he's not African-American, he's a white dude. But he's up there sitting next to Rachel Morin's mom. Her daughter was brutally murdered by a man who crossed the border. And he's trying to say it's just racism that exists here when it comes to, you know, people being xenophobic about the border. It has nothing to do with the realities of what we're experiencing, not only crime victims like Patty Morin, but others. But here's what she said this morning.
They say that the borders are safe. We live 1,800 miles away from the southern border. They're not safe. They're not safe. If you have a sanctuary city in your state, you're not safe.
Yeah, that's the important part. I've kind of circled back on this a couple of times because I've mentioned that the BBC crew that came into town, they were confused by why someone like me in Missouri that's far away from the border, or why other listeners would be concerned
about the border.
I'm not kidding you. They seemed very confused by that. I'm like, well, it's kind of an American issue. And, you know, I played the audio yesterday from CBS This Morning when the woman, I think, summed it up exceptionally well. They see resources. We all see resources that are going to people when there are American citizens that really should get some of those services first because they're taxpayers. But here's a little bit more of Rachel's mom.
She's the American mom. And she's not the only one in our cities that have been murdered. There was another murder by an illegal immigrant from El Salvador that happened a year before. And that person was just pleaded guilty to 4 murders, 2 rapes, and numerous other crimes. Jeez. They are bringing criminals into our country. They are allowing them into our smallest towns. And our people are dying.
Now, I will also just add here that the crime problem related to immigration, that's just one aspect of it. There's so many layers. But this is rather stunning when you hear it.
The Biden-Harris administration has not reached out to our family to offer condolences. And I've noticed that when speaking about the border policy, they would rather look in the other direction, kind of like a little kid. You know, if I don't see you, you don't see me. And I think that they are trying to avoid admitting that there is an issue.
Well, of course, and she summed it up quite well. I like the analogy as well. So then this guy is invited by the Democrats. He is an Arizona sheriff named David Hathaway, and here's what he tries to sell this committee today. Yep, let's see if I can get it to play here. We have different computers, so I'm trying to do my best.
People coming across are coming across to work. They're not coming as an invasion to import an army, to have a secret army embedded in the United States to attack America and attack American values. They're coming here to work.
Who said that they're coming here to work? Well, some of them are coming here to work. Some of them are coming here to deal drugs. Some of them have other motivations. I wouldn't want to live in Haiti. I've talked about Honduras. I wouldn't want to live in Honduras. I was on a mountaintop village where these kids and families, they lived in huts. They had no running water. They had no electricity or heat. And it was awful. I completely understand, especially with that perspective, why someone wants to come to this country. That's not the point. And this guy, you know, is just parroting the talking points of the Democrats here.
They're people of faith. A lot of them that I see are from Latin America, very family-oriented people, and they actually reduce price inflation. When you add productivity to the economy, you see help wanted signs all over the United States. If you add productivity to the economy, it makes the economy more productive.
All right, so he's just, you know, giving them a line of BS that just goes beyond what anyone should be. But I like this part here because he starts to call, Marjorie Taylor Greene has a good response, but he starts to talk about walls. The border walls.
And I hate to say that, I hate to use the R word, but it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the racism word. There's a xenophobic aspect to this. There was never a proposal to build a wall on the northern border, on the Canadian border. There was never any intent to aggressively enforce Title 42 on the Canadian border. So, you know, there is this kind of racist component to it that we kind of all ignore, but it's there smoldering in the background.
I love guilty white liberals.
Unbelievable.
Because they're my favorite. Really, dude, you're going to go up there to a congressional committee and you're not smart enough to understand the difference between the northern border and the southern border? Really? Have we had videos, Sue, of tens of thousands of people crossing from Canada? No, from Canada, though.
Oh, yeah. No.
They're all trying to get here all the Canadians are coming down here because of Justin Trudeau. They don't like his hair or something. It's utterly ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, he pulls the race card nonstop, xenophobic, bigoted, blah, blah, blah,
that
blah.
It's so a non-starter.
It's lazy. But Marjorie Taylor Greene said this. I thought this was a good response.
He said, certain policies smack of racism. For example, walls. I'd have you know, Sheriff, there are 77 major border walls around the world. 45 countries are planning and building more. Walls are not racist. Walls keep people safe. And this country is not safe. People are being murdered every day. The woman you're sitting next to's daughter was raped and brutally murdered.
Yeah,
that's not funny.
No,
walls are not racist.
And by the way, here's the other thing that's just completely comical about that whole thing about walls being, you know who supports the walls right now? Kamala Harris, because she's flipped on every other damn position, and now she says she wants walls. So that was just a comedy of errors today.
Wait a minute.
You know, on Capitol Hill.
That guy is sitting next to a woman who's a person.
Yeah, saying nonsense like that.
And saying stuff like that?
Guess who's responsible? That's the Democrats. It was their witness. It's shameful. It's embarrassing. But you know what? No one will ever hear about it because it won't even be covered legitimately in the legacy media. We're coming back. Hour number two. Sue's News coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Well, this was quite the hearing today that featured some crazy, wacky testimony. It was called A Country Without Borders, How the Biden-Harris Open Borders Policies Have Undermined Our Safety and Security. That was the hearing before the Committee on Homeland Security. And the mother of Rachel Morin, Rachel is a mother of five, found murdered in August. Her killer was arrested in June in Oklahoma, charged with first-degree murder, rape, and kidnapping. And, you know, her mom was testifying before this hearing today, saying some things. And here's what's interesting. Bill Malusian was covering this for Fox. And the dynamic, just before you hear Patty Morin, one of the witnesses that was invited by the Democrats is an Arizona sheriff who is African-American by the name of David Hathaway. And he's about as... I'm sorry, he's not. He's not African-American. He's a white dude. But he's up there sitting next to Rachel Morin's mom. Her daughter was brutally murdered by a man who crossed the border. And he's trying to say it's just racism that exists here when it comes to, you know, people being xenophobic about the border. It has nothing to do with the realities of what we're experiencing, not only crime victims like Patty Morin, but others. But here's what she said this morning.
They say that the borders are safe. We live 1,800 miles away from the southern border. They're not safe. They're not safe. If you have a sanctuary city in your state, you're not safe.
Yeah, that's the important part. I've kind of circled back on this a couple of times because I've mentioned that the BBC crew that came into town, they were confused by why someone like me in Missouri, that's far away from the border, or why other listeners would be concerned about the border.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. They seemed very confused by that. I'm like, well, it's kind of an American issue. And, you know, I played the audio yesterday from CBS This Morning when the woman, I think, summed it up exceptionally well. They see resources. We all see resources that are going to people when there are American citizens that really should get some of those services first because they're taxpayers. But here's a little bit more of Rachel's mom.
She's the American mom. And she's not the only one in our cities that have been murdered. There was another murder by an illegal immigrant from El Salvador that happened a year before. And that person was just pleaded guilty to four murders, two rapes, and numerous other crimes.
Jeez.
They are bringing criminals into our country. They are allowing them into our smallest towns, and our people are dying.
Now, I will also just add here that the crime problem related to immigration, that's just one aspect of it. There's so many layers. But this is rather stunning when you hear it.
The Biden-Harris administration has not reached out to our family to offer condolences. And I've noticed that when speaking about the border policy, they would rather look in the other direction, kind of like a little kid. You know, if I don't see you, you don't see me. And I think that they are trying to avoid admitting that there is an issue.
Well, of course, and she summed it up quite well. I like the analogy as well. So then this guy's invited by the Democrats. He is an Arizona sheriff named David Hathaway, and here's what he tries to sell this committee today. Yep, let's see if I can get it to play here. We have different computers, so I'm trying to do my best.
People coming across are coming across to work. They're not coming as an invasion to import an army, to have a secret army embedded in the United States to attack America and attack American values. They're coming here to work.
Who said that they're coming here to work? Well, some of them are coming here to work. Some of them are coming here to deal drugs. Some of them have other motivations. I wouldn't want to live in Haiti. I've talked about Honduras. I wouldn't want to live in Honduras. I was on a mountaintop village where these kids and families, they lived in huts. They had no running water. They had no electricity or heat. And it was awful. I completely understand, especially with that perspective, why someone wants to come to this country. That's not the point. And this guy, you know, is just parroting the talking points of the Democrats here.
They're people of faith. A lot of them that I see are from Latin America, very family-oriented people, and they actually reduce price inflation. When you add productivity to the economy, you see help wanted signs all over the United States. If you add productivity to the economy, it makes the economy more productive.
All right, so he's just, you know, giving them a line of BS that just goes beyond what anyone should be. But I like this part here, because he starts to call... Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene has a good response, but he starts to talk about walls, the border walls.
And I hate to say that, I hate to use the R word, but it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the racism word. There's a xenophobic aspect to this. There was never a proposal to build a wall on the northern border, on the Canadian border. There was never any intent to aggressively enforce Title 42 on the Canadian border. So, you know, there is this kind of racist component to it that we kind of all ignore, but it's there smoldering in the background.
I love guilty white liberals.
Unbelievable.
Because they're my favorite. Really, dude, you're going to go up there to a congressional committee and you're not smart enough to understand the difference between the northern border and the southern border? Really? Have we had videos, Sue, of tens of thousands of people crossing Canada? No, from Canada, though.
Oh, yeah. No! Oh,
they're all trying to get here to... all the Canadians are coming down here because of Justin Trudeau. They don't like his hair or something. It's utterly ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, he pulls the race card nonstop, xenophobic, bigoted, blah, blah, blah,
that
blah.
It's so a non-starter.
It's lazy. But Marjorie Taylor Greene said this. I thought this was a good response.
He said, certain policies smack of racism. For example, walls. I'd have you know, Sheriff, there are 77 major border walls around the world. 45 countries are planning and building more. Walls are not racist. Walls keep people safe. And this country is not safe. People are being murdered every day. The woman you're sitting next to's daughter was raped and brutally murdered.
Yeah,
that's not funny.
No, walls
are not racist.
And by the way, here's the other thing that's just completely comical about that whole thing about walls being, you know who supports the walls right now? Kamala Harris, because she's flipped on every other damn position, and now she says she wants walls. So that was just a comedy of errors today.
Wait a minute.
You know, on Capitol Hill.
That guy is sitting next to a woman who's a person.
Yeah, saying nonsense like that.
And saying stuff like that?
Guess who's responsible? That's the Democrats. It was their witness. It's shameful. It's embarrassing. But you know what? No one will ever hear about it because it won't even be covered legitimately in the legacy media. We're coming back. Hour number two. Sue's News coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.